Kiwanis International, or in particular, Kiwanis in our district, in this three-state district, our emphasis or our foundation is in pediatric trauma. And what we have done a number of years ago, we looked at what our foundation's focus should be. And it was determined, oh gosh, it's got to be 15 years ago, that our focus had to be in pediatric trauma.
They hand out teddy bears to, or stuffed animals to kids in ambulances. They hand out bike helmets. They do car seat safety, things like this to help the traumatized children. The thing is that the teddy bears run out and the bike helmets run out. And so the thought process was a few years back now, let's do something that's really long term.
And the governor at that time was a gentleman named Les Wixon. And Les said at the time that he had thought that we wanted to train paramedics and get paramedics the advanced information that came out of the pediatric program here at Loma Linda. And Lance was very clear with us and said, no, you do not see old paramedics. He says, you see old doctors.
No one plans on coming and seeing me today. Unlike when I was a pediatrician, you plan on going to the doctor. So usually people are having a pretty bad day when they come and see me.
I should have given this to you.
Have I any history with some institutions or allergies?
Yeah, 17-year-old male with bilateral lay and neck and back pain.
140 Tom, pulse to 105, he's showing the regular. He's 18, clear, 99% on auto breather.
Ejected over 50 feet off his motorbike after head-on collision. Do you copy your assessment? I thank you very much for that. I copy that the neuro is potentially abnormal. Go ahead and make your destination Loma Linda University 50-minute ETA at this time.
Head-on with vehicle in the intersection. Going approximately 50 miles an hour. He slid about 50 feet. He was wearing his helmet.
Airway's intact. Breast sounds bilaterally. Do you have anything that's hurting you right now?
Can you feel some finger?
Everything kind of hurts. Both
ribs
hurt.
Kind of stick on your finger, buddy.
Yeah.
Where did your ribs hurt?
Right there.
Right here it hurts?
Down lower.
A little bit down lower. Did you pass out? You cold?
Yeah.
Nervous? Okay. Pupils are active, 4-2, brisk, bilateral.
You want to put this on your tongue for me, buddy?
Okay. It's got abrasion on the anterior right knee, lateral right ankle.
Ow.
What hurts?
Our left ankle.
Your left ankle.
Ow.
That hurts down there?
Yeah.
He's got pain on his left ankle. I don't see any deformity. Still has good pulses.
Do your parents know you're there yet?
Yeah, my dad was there when I crashed.
I don't see any fractures on the chest as of right now. I was also concerned about collapsed lung, especially where he's having all that pain on the right side. I'm going to wait until it gets sent over to our big machines where I can actually blow up the image a little bit more because I really can't tell from there. But nothing really obviously or anything like that. The rest of the heart looks okay. So as of right now, I don't have any specific injuries for you, but we're really early.
The fireman said it was 51 feet, so he was thrown 51 feet off his bike, and the forks are totally broken, the bike's totaled. I'm surprised he's alive, so it was a pretty bad accident.
You okay? You feel a little bit better than you were over there. You weren't moving. So the guy hit you?
I was going pretty fast, and the light was yellow. I just thought I had enough time, and I didn't, I guess.
Good thing you had your helmet on, Patrick.
I can't even believe I survived that.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you did.
We're going to get some x-rays and some CT scans. And he's got some signs of injury, some symptoms for injury. So I don't exactly know what those injuries are, but I suspect it. So we're going to get some more films.
It looks okay.
I looked at your scans of your abdomen. I'm waiting for the radiologist to read them, but I don't see any type of significant injury at this point. You're pretty lucky. You're a lucky guy. Plus you got the disc goes all the way. Well, it's more good news.
Okay.
The spine films look okay also, and there are no broken bones on your arm or your leg that I can see. So I think he's having a lot of pain right now. That's probably muscular pain, kind of the whiplash. My body just took a beating. I'm going to hurt all over kind of pain.
Okay.
I mean, we got to see if we can get him up, road test him. There might be an issue with pain control, and if we really are having an issue with pain control, then we may need to bring him in to observe him for a little bit of time.
Okay.
But we'll go from there, see how he does. All right. Were the scratches on the helmet new?
Some are new, some are old.
Do you know which ones are new?
You know what? I know this stuff is new, so that's when he hit. And I think this stuff here, this one's old.
That one's old. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I specialized in the kids who have had a number of things. One of the, you know, far extreme would be the full traumatic arrest. So we're doing CPR, we're placing lines and tubes in order to keep a person alive. The other end of the spectrum would be a parent that's concerned about a rash, a cough, a cold, a fever.
So we have a baby who has a fever, and the really young babies, when they're less than a month, it's hard to tell if they might have meningitis. So we don't worry about that as much for an older baby, but for the really little ones where you can't get a really good exam, any baby who has a fever, we have to do a lumbar puncture, which is an invasive test to take some spinal fluid and send it for analysis and send a culture to see if it's showing signs of a bacterial infection. It involves basically putting a needle in the lower back to withdraw some fluid. And actually this patient had another attempt at another hospital and they weren't able to do it. So we're hoping that we can get it this time. Oh yeah, there's CSF though. See how that looks a little clearish?
Yeah.
So now we'll send this off for our analysis here and then a culture, which is the kind of definitive test to tell us if there's a meningitis, which is an infection around the brain. Usually the culture takes about 2 days to come back. So for a baby this age, you know, we don't take any chances. We keep them in the hospital and give them really strong antibiotics in case it is a brain infection. All done. So now we'll go get Mom and Dad and tell them that went well.
This is Joshua.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thorpe. I'm one of the supervising doctors. And this is the sound that you hear with the difficulty breathing? Okay, all right. You see how he still has a little sucking in right underneath
that's
right there?
What I noticed. That's why I brought him in, because it was really bad.
Yeah, it just shows me that he's having a little bit of a hard time getting his air through his upper airway. It sounds like he has croup. So basically, he has a viral infection that's causing swelling right around his vocal cords, which gives him that hoarse quality to his breathing. That's called stridor. Yeah. And you'll notice with his cough, he probably has a very hoarse cough, which gets worse when he cries. Sometimes it gets worse at night. Well, it does get worse at night. We're going to give him another breathing treatment to help relax him, only because he's not agitated, he's not crying, he's fairly, you know, just sitting here, and he's still having quite a bit of that loud breathing. Okay, sweet pea, I'm just going to lay him down. There we go. Wow, that's some abdominal muscles. Can you hold his hands for me? Good job. Well, we'll go ahead and give him one more treatment, okay? As long as he's not stridorous at rest and he's not desatting, then I feel comfortable sending him home. So this is a 2-year-old that... the mom was pulling out of the driveway, and the child didn't want to see the mom leave, so ran out into the driveway, and the child got caught underneath the car, and it's unclear whether it was driven, the car drove over the child, or whether the child was drugged by the car. Has quite a bit of abrasion, some bruising along the shoulder, and has quite an impressive laceration or cut on the scalp that involves a majority of the scalp. And we're going to be getting our head CT scan fairly soon. Mom was the one that was driving the car. Obviously, she's very distraught. So far, we have put a pressure dressing because it was some bleeding that was coming from the head laceration. And we just had to wrap his head up really tight, so there's a big white bandage on the side of his head. Chest x-ray we already took because there's some bruising around the back and on the front. And it doesn't seem to be any broken bones or any collapsed lung at this point. And we're just waiting for the head scan. Has no bleeding inside or around his brain. There might be a small fracture underneath the laceration. Wait and see. Other than that, the chest x-ray looks okay. There's no broken bones on the chest wall. The lungs appear to be normal. They're not collapsed, which is one of the concerns that you have. So it seems at this point there is quite a big cut on the scalp that we'll need to take care of. I just want to have the final radiologist really make sure that I'm not missing a fraction that the radiologist can see. And then what we'll have to do, we talked a little bit about this, is some sedation medicine to wash that out. So if there is no fracture, we need to wash out that laceration. We need to repair it.
Thank you.
So we just finished the laceration repair. He's just waking up right now. We reviewed the head CT scan. There's no signs of a fracture underneath of the skull, or and there's no bleeding around the brain or pressing on the brain. So the laceration came together quite nicely, and we're just going to wait for him to wake up now.
The draw, I think, to this profession is just waiting and seeing what comes in and being able to take care of anything and trusting your training that you can take care of anything that walks through the door.
I tell people when they join our organization, they are joining an organization that believes in kids. And the Kiwanis, to me, is kids.
It was really quite an experience growing up in this area. You have a lot of different cultures that are coming together. I remember in school, we'd have a variety of different ethnicities, different people. So I got to learn a lot about different cultures. There also is the aspect with San Bernardino has the stigma of it being a dangerous city. And, you know, it is true. There is, quite a crime rate and then drugs, but I think it's more up to the individual and trying to stay away from those sorts of negative aspects and trying to do something positive for your life. My parents were real strict with me and encouraged me to focus on school and study hard to reach my full potential. So that's one of the reasons I stayed away from gangs. I also saw some of the negative aspects that happened to some of my peers and relatives who had gotten involved with drugs and gangs. Where I grew up at, we had some basketball courts across the street, and there was a field, and oftentimes we would go there and play basketball or do some kind of sport. And we had to be careful one time because we were out there playing, and usually there was a group of guys who would play. There were two different levels in the court. There was a lower level and an upper level. And we would basically play wherever we could find a court, open court. But one time we were there playing, and apparently somebody found out that their enemy was playing basketball. So they came by and started shooting, and we had to duck down because we didn't want to get shot. So this is where I grew up at, and I remember that big rock right there. We were, my uncle and my father were digging a hole because they had to fix this line, and they found that big rock, and even today that big rock is still there. You know, things always change, but you never forget where you come from. That always stays with you. I was always getting into fights at school. People would pick on me, so my parents wanted me to learn how to defend myself, you know, in case. Because when you're at that age, most boys are always fighting and challenging each other. So instead of taking guitar lessons, I ended up going into karate. And I was in it for about 3.5 years, and I actually obtained my first degree black belt in Tangsudo karate. I always kept that a secret. I didn't want people to know I was in karate because I always feared that somebody would want to challenge me or see what I knew if I could really defend myself. I did use it a few times. I had to use it to defend myself. Luckily, it wasn't anything too serious. And I remember that we would sometimes go to karate tournaments over in San Diego County. It was a really, really fun time, and got to meet a lot of different people. And it was also unique in that it was at Norton Air Force Base, so everybody there was in the military, affiliated with the military. So I got to also see that aspect of life.
So I took karate at this building here. It's called the Galaxy, and it was a part of Norton Air Force Base. And took classes, actually, it was up on the second floor. But it was a pretty good facility. They had punching bags and kicking pads. And, you know, it was like their own little, like I said, it was like your own little dojo, your own little environment.
They really instilled like self-discipline and how to use your mind to just sort of understand how things are going, just not only with fighting, but just life in general. I attended Aquinas High School, which is also in San Bernardino, and graduated from San Gabriel High School in 1998. Well, I was interested in two distinct fields, politics and science, and I was able to attend California Golden Boy State. And what that is, it's gives like they select high school students, and it gives you a practical operation of how government works. I also was able to attend the National Hispanic Youth Initiative in Biomedical Research and Policy Development. And I went to Washington, D.C., and I was real fortunate. I was able to visit institutes such as the National Institutes of Health and other agencies within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But I have to say that the major turning point was when my grandfather fell ill. He suffered a stroke and was critically ill in the hospital. And I remember we would always go and visit him, and just seeing just the different equipment, different tests they would run, seeing them analyze different data, I was just was enthralled by that process. And, you know, after being involved with all that for the time he was sick, that really cemented my desire to pursue a career in the medical field. So I ended up getting involved with Loma Linda University. Dr. Marino De Leon had a program at the time called the RAMP Research Program, and it was for high school students in the area who were invited to do research for a summer. So I did research in the lab in 1997 and 1998, and I was able to see firsthand the scientific process, what types of cutting-edge technology were being performed, and I really was excited about this process. And when I applied to college, I found out about a program called the National Institutes of Health Undergraduate Scholarship Program. And what this program is, they select students based on their academic record and their desire to become a biomedical research scientist. And they invite you to go to the NIH for 10 weeks. You work in a laboratory, and then you get to do different workshops for career development. And the really nice part about it is that they provide up to $20,000 in support for your education as an undergrad. I was one of two high school students selected for the scholarship, which normally they give it to undergraduates who are at the junior or senior level. So I was real fortunate in that I hadn't even set foot in a college lecture hall, and I already had this wonderful opportunity. And that was because of the program through Dr. De Leon doing research at Loma Linda as a high school student. So once I got to the NIH, I was just fell in love with research. We had Dr. Francis Collins, who at the time was the director of the Human Genome Project, and he came and gave a lecture to us. And I still remember one of the quotes he said, "We treat the symptoms of diseases and not the actual disease itself." So when I heard that, I thought that I would really be happy and passionate about pursuing a career in biomedical research. I also had come to Loma Linda University in the summer of 2002 to do a research program for the summer. And just when I saw the quality of research and the questions, I really wanted to pursue a PhD. I really wanted to get trained. The PhD really trained you really well for doing research, how to think like a scientist, how to analyze data, interpret data, and design experiments. And I thought that would be the best option for myself. Osteoporosis poses a major public health threat, with 6 million fractures occurring annually in the United States. And according to the NIH, one out of every two women and one out of every four men will have an osteoporosis-related fracture sometime in their lifetime. So with this data in hand, there's an important need to address this problem of osteoporosis. Recently, there's mounting evidence that oxidative stress depletes important antioxidants in bone and activates bone cells, which can resorb bone and cut up bone faster than bones being formed, and it inhibits bone formation. So although we know that this is happening, the molecular mechanisms of this process is not well understood. So what I'm currently doing in my project is we're focusing on this gene called glutaridoxin 5, or GRX5, and it was identified to be highly expressed in bone, and currently there is no known function in bone. They have an idea of what it may be doing in other systems, such as yeast, but as far as in the mammalian system, there really aren't any studies about it.
Gabriel's work in the last 3 years has been focused on how this gene works in bone cells and how it protects bone cells from oxidative stress. This is a very important area of research because, you know, we know very little about the effect of oxidative stress with age in bone, although it's a very important causative factor for osteoporosis.
And we're just trying to see what signaling molecules are being affected by GRX5, how it's protecting against its bone loss. And the hope is to identify important molecules and use these as therapeutic targets to help treat osteoporosis in the future. So a lot of the work we do is involved with cell culture experiments where we either knock out a gene or overexpress a gene. So it's important to have a good system for growing cells. So what we use is an incubator, and it mimics physiological conditions. It's at 37 degrees and has a 5% carbon dioxide. And usually we keep our cells growing here. And we do a lot of experiments in a cell culture hood. And we keep this because it has a hood with laminar flow to protect against any outside contaminants. So the environment in here is essentially sterile. My long-term goal is to become a professor at a university and teach and also run a successful research program. As far as the area goes, I'm still open. I'm interested, of course, in bone, neuroscience, and stroke, and perhaps stem cell research.